I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor.
This is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, and the Doctor's Inn is a radio show where I like to bring in guests and discuss health and medical information that I think is important for all of us to be aware of. The opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Is made possible by the and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events including Artoberfest, Chico Palio, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Art, visit friendsofartsupstate.org. And by locally owned Mama Celeste's Stone Baked Pizzeria, celebrating their four-year anniversary of serving 30 signature pizzas, cal meatballs, wings, and including a vegan option. Mama Celeste's is located in the Safeway Plaza on Nord, open every day at 4 p.m. and noon on Sunday. Mama Celeste Stone Bay for four great years. Their phone number, 0. Be about information that I think is important for all of us to know relative to the function of our healthcare system in this country, including the functioning of the Affordable Care Act and how this system can be fixed. I think this is an important time of the year to be talking about this with primaries coming up and the November election down the line. Today's guest is, we're very fortunate, I will say, to have David Welsh, a registered nurse at Inloe Hospital. He also is on the board of directors of the California Nurses Association. David, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ken. Always fun to spend time with you.
Excellent. So, let us start by hearing from you about our system. Talk to us.
Well, let's see where to start. I guess the Affordable Care Act is a good place to start, to just kind of put that in perspective, where we are with that, how we got there a little bit, and what some of the problems and the gaps are. I think this, obviously, as anybody who's paid any attention knows, has been an incredibly polarizing issue, and a lot of people have really strong opinions about this one way or another. Many of those opinions, I have to say, not very well informed, really regardless of what side of it they're on, sometimes not very well informed. The key, when the Affordable Care Act was created, the goal was to get as many more people covered as possible without disturbing the private insurance system. And that was really one of the wanted to maintain a private insurance as central to coverage for the great majority of Americans. And of course, if you're going to get lots of people covered with private insurance, there's a set of things that you really have to do, kind of. You have to require the insurance companies to sell insurance to anybody who wants to buy. You have to, and if you're going to do that, you pretty much have to require everybody to buy insurance, because if you don't require everyone to buy insurance, then people will just wait till they get sick and buy it then. And then, of course, if you're doing those two things, then you've got a lot of people whose economics just make it impossible for them to buy insurance without help. So the third part of it that has to come in there is you have to subsidize those people who can't afford it on their own. So that's basically the gist of what the Affordable Care Act does. There's a lot of other bits and pieces hung on it. And of course, there was the Medi-Cal or Medicaid expansion, which is a big part of it, raising the ceiling for people to qualify for that. So that's the gist of what that act does. And it's done a lot of good for a lot of people. A lot of people who weren't able to get coverage before have coverage now. And a number of people have significantly better coverage, and a lot of people don't have to worry about losing healthcare coverage for various reasons that they had to worry about before. So it's certainly done some good things there. But what it still leaves us with is all of the worst features of our healthcare system are still really left in place. Its complexity, its inequality, and the incompleteness of coverage that we had before are still largely there. We've got more people covered, but we still have something close to 30 million people in this country not covered. We still have an incredibly complicated system where the complication itself wastes a great deal of money. As you know, the average American physician in private practice spends a great deal of money just on the process of getting paid, both in terms of the staff that they hire to negotiate with insurance companies and the time that the doctor themselves has to spend in dealing with insurance companies. A great deal of waste goes into that. Hospitals do the same on an even larger scale. And then the insurance companies have their marketing expenses. They have their extraordinarily high executive salaries. Some of the CEOs of the insurance, big insurance companies, are making on the order of $60 million a year. Hmm. So all of that comes out of the healthcare premiums that people pay. All of that is essentially subtracted from the resources that are available to actually provide care. We still have an extraordinary level of inequality where some people have excellent insurance and very good coverage and are able to get all the care they need. And we have other people who, yes, they have insurance, but they have very high copays and deductibles and are still spending, maybe in many cases, still spending an uncomfortable amount of money to get insurance that they really can't use very well. So a lot was accomplished, but there's still these enormous gaps and problems. And so from my perspective, of course, there's really no way that tinkering around the edges of that system can fix those problems. The problems are all fundamental to the structure of having this very mixed multiplayer payment system that we have. So many different levels of coverage, so many different rules. When you see a patient in your office or a doctor in private practice sees a patient in their office, they never know, they have to think about, okay, what will this person's coverage allow for? What can I do for this person? I know what they need, but I don't know what will be covered. All that kind of thinking that is just integral to having such a mixed and complex system as we have. And then, as I said, all of that waste that is built into the complexity of this system. And really, the only way that you're going to get away from that is to do some version of what every other modern industrialized country does, and that is provide an equal level of care for all of their citizens. There's actually a lot of ways of doing that. When you look at the programs around the world, there's a great deal of variability in the details, ranging from what the English do, which is essentially where the doctors and nurses all work for the government, and it's largely a government-provided program, to at the opposite extreme, there are various in various countries, there are things like purely nonprofit national insurance schemes in which they're essentially where all the doctors and hospitals and all are private, but there's a national insurance that provides for the coverage of it. That in some cases, like Canada, is purely a government-run program. In other cases, it's independent but heavily regulated nonprofit insurances. But what all of them have in common is that when you get down to the patient and the doctor, everybody's coverage looks alike and everybody's coverage is simple. That you don't have to worry about, well, what coverage does this person have versus this person? Everybody is basically covered equally for all of the things that they need. And again, lots of variability in the details, but that doesn't really matter in terms of what goes on behind the stage. What matters is what goes on at the provider level and the patient level.
You know, hearing you say that, I think, you know, we don't have enough doctors in this country. A lot of patients in Chico can't find a doctor who is accepting new patients, and I know any of us could see more patients if we didn't have to spend so much time dealing with the prior authorizations and trying to figure out what I can and can't do. And now I have to redo because this patient can't have this treatment or this medication, or just trying to figure that out takes time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time. It literally takes from my time from being able to see more patients.
Right.
And it's unfortunate.
Yes, and again, all of those resources, it's not only takes away your time, reduces your ability to see patients, but it uses up healthcare resources in general in addition to just your time.
Yeah.
We had a very interesting experience a few years ago. Hopefully my wife won't mind my telling this story, but we were traveling, we were bicycle touring in southern France some years ago, and she developed a respiratory ailment, basically a bacterial bronchitis as it got worse and worse as the days went by, we put off going to a doctor because we thought about our image was what that would be like in this country, in a strange city where you don't know anybody and you're in a small town and you're going to spend all day in an emergency room, and then add the language barrier to that, and we just kind of kept putting it off, hoping it would get better, and it didn't get better. It got worse and worse until finally one morning she said, I really need to see a doctor. It was a national holiday, and we were in a small town about the size of Gridley. I went down to the hotel desk, and I said, my wife needs to see a doctor. Care call for that day. Nice office, but it was a small office because she didn't have a great deal of office staff because she didn't need a lot of office staff to deal with insurance companies.
Mm.
And it was very pleasant, very nice office. As it happened, the doctor, even though living in France, was actually Dutch, so of course spoke English very well, and everything went very smoothly. We got she apologized for the fact that the rate was a little more than normal because it was the holiday, and we got a prescription and went off to the pharmacy that was open on the holiday. So they take turns doing that, and everything went very smoothly, and it was so much better than the same experience would have been traveling for a traveler in this country. It was just a totally different experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It just makes me think the more, you know, and hearing that situation, it just makes me think again that we have enough doctoring, less time with the hassle, and healthier patients would be the outcome.
Indeed.
And we could see more patients there. We could potentially have a situation in Chico, California, where you could be a patient without a doctor. And yeah, there are doctors taking new patients because we can see more patients. We don't have to spend the time paperworking with insurance companies.
And another piece that kind of goes along with this, too, is that relative to most of the single-payer countries, the countries that provide universal health insurance, our physician workforce is really unbalanced in favor mm-hmm. of specialists mm-hmm. and to a deficiency of primary care doctors. When you look at the statistics on health studies, the one aspect of a healthcare system that truly has impact on people's life expectancy is access to a primary care doctor. Access to specialists and specialty care actually makes relatively little difference in terms of population health, but it's access to primary care that makes the biggest difference. Because our medical education is so expensive now, and most doctors come out of their education with a great deal of student debt, that gives them an incentive to go into a more lucrative specialty. And what that means are the procedure-based specialties that pay relatively highly rather than primary care, which doesn't pay nearly as well, as you, of course, know. And so one of the things that many of the European countries do is that medical education, while it's difficult to get in, it's demanding, just like it is here. It's, you know, it very elite education in terms of the difficulty of getting into the medical school. Once you get in, there's little or no cost. And so that's a very big difference, and that frees doctors to choose their specialty without having to worry so much about choosing the most lucrative specialty. They can choose what they really want to do, which for a great many doctors is, in fact, primary care, because it's often the most psychologically rewarding kind of work for doctors.
What an interesting idea, you know, being in a medical school and not having the large burden when you leave, and that pointing your way relative to what specialty you're going to go into, the money being the factor.
Yeah.
And having it not be the factor. Wow, great
exactly,
idea.
Exactly, yeah. The French system is actually the one that I'm most familiar with, really, of the foreign systems. And they have, essentially, their medical education is nearly free. And their ratio of primary care doctors to population is much, much better than ours. Mm-hmm. Much, much more in terms of availability of primary care docs.
And their outcomes in health, their statistics relative to, you know, population outcomes in health are probably superior to ours.
Much, much superior, yeah. And interestingly, not only on the big issues like, you know, the overall life expectancy, which really, when you talk about overall life expectancy, the healthcare system only plays a relatively small part in that. But when you look on something like your life expectancy once you are diagnosed with diabetes, or your life expectancy once you're diagnosed with COPD, the French system actually does a great deal better than we do on that. Mm-hmm. Their overall population life expectancy is better than ours too, but that may have more to do with things like diet and other general health habits than it does with the healthcare system. But but their ability, one of the smart things they do, and I think is a very smart kind of thing, they do have some patient copays for things like going to the doctor, but there's two main situations where those copays go away. One is if you have a catastrophic illness, you get cancer, you're in an auto accident that seriously injures you, or anything like that. No copays for the care of that. The other way, place where there's no copays is if you have a chronic illness that requires regular care. You have diabetes would be the classic example. You want people with diabetes to get and do that. You want to make it as easy as possible for people to do that. So there aren't any copays for that care either.
Wow, you know the way you describe the system there and other countries, specifically France, the thing that comes to my mind is, wow, someone was thinking.
Yes.
When that was arranged that way. And our system is not thinking.
Yeah.
It's money. Money is the object in a variety of ways, but not thinking about health.
And here's another one that I think is interesting is their system is actually, it's fairly recent. It's not that many years ago, I think in the 1970s, 80s, that they really did most of the creation of that system. And they did a very interesting thing in terms of the relationship with the doctors, which was basically they went to the doctors and they said, in this new system, we're going to pay you a little less, but we're not going to micromanage what you do. We're going to trust your judgment to do what you want to do with the patient, and we're not going to fight with you over whether that was the right thing to do or whatever. We're going to let you make the decisions. And most doctors were pretty happy to take that deal. And I think that a lot of American doctors would be pretty happy with that too, because just as we've said, they spend so much time arguing with insurance companies over whether what they want to do for their patient is actually necessary or justified
right.
or whatever.
We are micromanaged here in
yes,
this country.
Yes, extremely.
Yeah. So I hear you talk about other countries like France and the health situation and how it makes sense what they're doing there. I want to have the listeners understand potentially why we are different here in this country.
Well, we're different.
Let me word it a little bit differently. Why are we are different in this country in a negative way relative to how we do it, healthcare?
Yeah. You know, it's, I guess I'm not exactly a historian on this kind of stuff, but I think one of the critical, there were a number of critical choice points where different people in American politics thought, we should try to do a universal healthcare system. I mean, the first really universal healthcare system, I think, was the German one, which goes all the way back to, what, Kaiser Wilhelm or something like that. It goes a long time ago. So the idea isn't new. But I think one of the critical choice points was during World War II when there were ceilings on wages. And there was a great deal of demand for workers, obviously, because many people had gone off to fight, so there was a shortage of workers. Normally, a shortage of workers would lead to rising wages. The government wanted to keep a lid on wages, so what companies did instead was start offering their employees health benefits.
Uh-huh.
So that led to us having this employment-based system where most people got their health insurance through their work. And so once that tradition was established, it became very difficult to change that. That created a lot of momentum in that direction, and that sort of set us on a path. And once there was a great deal of money invested in that, and there were people making a great deal of money off of that system, it became very difficult to to change that. And so we have, and of course, the insurance companies have enormous amounts of money. The health insurance companies that are very invested in our current system have enormous amounts of money, and they're able to spend enormous amounts of money on lobbying Congress and on making contributions to politicians and so on. So they have, that gives them tremendous power in a political system that's largely money-based and in which big financial contributions make a very big difference.
So do you think the private health insurance industry was involved with the putting together of the Affordable Care Act?
Absolutely.
Details?
Yes, they were very much part of the negotiations there. And so a lot of the design of that act was designed to make the private insurance companies comfortable enough that they wouldn't fight it. And so that was a lot of the goal there, was to neutralize them as opposition to it. And so there were pieces put into it to make them happy, pieces put into it to make the drug companies happy, people, pieces put into it to make hospitals not too unhappy. But really, those were the players. The drug companies and the insurance companies were the people who had the power and the money that they could have derailed it. And so there were a lot of the design of it was designed to make them comfortable enough that they wouldn't derail it.
I'm thinking of when the discussions were occurring relative to the Affordable Care Act, I was thinking the other day, well, why weren't there physicians in those committees? Why weren't there? And then I remembered that there were some physicians who were forcefully removed from the listening of the goings on of those committees. Is that correct?
Also, some nurses, yes.
Oh, is that right?
Including a couple of friends of mine.
Yes. Oh, really?
There was a healthcare committee where people that you know and the larger national union that my group of activists for a bit and got hauled off to jail. So,
such as the business to help with healthcare, that's what we know, mm-hmm. and yet hauled off to jail
yes.
for making voice.
Indeed.
It's just so ironic
yes.
and disgusting, I might add.
Yes, indeed.
So in a couple minutes here, I tell you what, why don't we, how about a break now? Let's listen to a little music here for a few minutes, and we'll come back and talk about a bit more detail of what we can do in this country to stabilize this healthcare system and fix the problems that we've been hearing about here the last few minutes. Does that sound like a good idea? This is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. I want to remind us all that towards the end of the show today, we'll be speaking with Dr. Mark Lundberg from the Butte County Public Health Department, and he'll be telling us about this Zika virus, so stay tuned for that at the end of this show. Right now, we're speaking with, and he sits on the board of directors also of the California Nurses Association. And what we've been hearing from David about has to do with the function of our healthcare system, and included in that is the function of our healthcare system after the implementation. What I'm hoping for the remainder of our time with David, we can now hear more about what can be done to improve this, the efficiency and the working of our healthcare system for our benefit, we the people, the benefit for we the people. And politically, who we may be able to count on to champion a fixing of this system and facilitate a fixing of this healthcare system. So where, tell us, you're on, David. Take it away.
Well, of course, ever since the process of passing the Affordable Care Act, there has been this huge amount of controversy that has remained alive. Republicans in Congress have now repealed the Affordable Care Act. At least the House has voted 60 times repeal it. Interestingly, they keep promising to offer an alternative, and so far, despite having taken 60 votes to repeal, have not been able to offer an alternative. And really, the reason they haven't is for the reasons that I talked about earlier. If you're going to get everybody covered with private insurance, what you end up with is fundamentally the three components of the Affordable Care Act: require insurance companies to sell, require people to buy, and subsidize those who can't afford it. And then you've got the Affordable Care Act over again, which of course they since they can't do that, they can't really do anything.
And that's what they do, nothing.
Yes. So
no proposal.
So that's that. That's sort of one side of the aisle, you might say. And then basically on the Democratic side, we have Hillary Clinton, who is largely believes that we can tinker with the Affordable Care Act to fix its problems. And fundamentally, I don't think that's possible to do because its problems all grow out of its basic structure, meaning the determination to keep private insurance at the center of it. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're determined to keep private insurance at the center, you're still going to have the complexity, you're still going to have the inequality, you're still going to have all of the problems that we talked about in the first half. There's just no way to eliminate those problems if you're keeping private insurance central.
And people being unable to utilize their insurance because
right.
they can't afford it.
Right. And so that finally brings us around to the last position, which is Senator Sanders, who is really determined to essentially, and you know, people can quibble over details, but by and large, what he wants to do is to take the one piece of our healthcare finance system that is the most efficient, the most effective, and is very, it's been around now for 50 years and is very well known and trusted, and that is the Medicare program, mm-hmm. and basically expand that to cover everyone. Now, that still leaves some problems because there are gaps in Medicare, but part of the goal, at least what he would like to accomplish, is to fill some of those gaps, meaning most particularly vision coverage, dental coverage, and the fact that the Medicare drug plan is really not truly a Medicare plan. I mean, it's really a private insurance plan under the supervision of Medicare, essentially, with some subsidization
with
from Medicare.
With some subsidization from our tax dollars.
Yes. So so it's really subsidizing private insurance.
It is.
And that's much less efficient than just offering it as a single program to everyone. And of course, one of the big parts that would then become possible to do is for Medicare, a national single-payer Medicare that covered everybody, Medicare for all, could then use its buying power to push down drug prices and bring those under control and more down to the level that people in other countries pay for the same medications, which is often a great deal less than what we pay here. Mm-hmm. So, again, one can look at different proposals. There's numerous different variants in the details of how you do that kind of program. But the core really needs to be a program that covers everyone with a single program, covers everyone for the same level of care, that offers that simplicity and universality that you can really only get by covering everyone with a single program, and the efficiency. When you look at just purely from the standpoint of efficiency, the range, the other countries that cover everyone If you look at the per capita cost, how much they spend per person, it ranges from less than half of what we spend at one extreme to about two-thirds of what we spend, and they get better results by and large than what we get. And so despite the anecdotes that people tell about long waiting times and things like that, most of those don't really hold up when you look at them in terms of real research and population numbers and how the people in those countries feel about their healthcare systems.
Can you repeat that one more time, how it compares with other countries, the cost per capita? Say that one more time.
Ranging from, at the high end, two-thirds of what we spend to less than half of what
per
we
capita.
Spend. Per capita. Yeah.
And
that's to cover the entire population.
Everybody's not covered.
Leaving a bunch of people uncovered like we have now. And the outcomes, by and large, in most of those systems are better. The actual measurable population outcomes. And when you poll people in countries, despite the conservatives that spread these various horror stories, when you poll people in Canada or Britain about would they like to switch to doing what America does, and you don't find hardly anybody that would like to switch to doing what we do. They're mostly much happier doing what they do.
It's what you just said. It would make common sense brains when we look at how we could arrange our healthcare system to be more efficient. Better outcomes, less costly per capita, everyone covered, and it's beside me. It always has been beside me why there's so much resistance to that. And again, it's down to the power of the private health insurance industry and the lobbying they do with the Congress, the misinformation that is spread in this country and has been for years.
Yes.
Relative to what change would look like and what it would do to you. And even in physicians, you know, there's physicians who are opposed, but, it's not using their heads. They're not thinking when they're in opposition.
Well, you know, I saw a chart that looked at physicians' political leanings by specialty.
Oh.
And what you find, of course, is that the physicians like yourself, the people who do primary care, who spend their time in the office with patients, by and large, lean relatively to the left politically and tend to favor a national single-payer Medicare-for-all type healthcare program, whereas physicians in the most lucrative procedural specialties tend, by and large, to have more conservative leanings. Of course, they are a great deal wealthier than you are, by and large, and tend to have more conservative leanings and tend to oppose that. Mm-hmm. Because if you were going to make a program like that make sense and going to make it work really well, part of doing it would be increasing the reward for time spent in the office, improving the financial picture for the primary care doctor, and that probably would come at some cost to the procedural specialist too.
Yeah, yeah. And I think just to say, I think the last poll I read, I can't remember who did the polling, was and primary care, greater than 50% do favor a single-payer system.
Yes.
At this point, last polling, I said.
Right.
I mean, I saw. So we're moving in the right direction.
Yes, I think physicians are getting it. And I think, again, a lot of it is just that the frustration of dealing with private insurance is so overwhelming.
If you only knew what we go through.
Yeah. I hear enough of it from physician friends.
So much to get paid. That's a problem too, but it's the getting the care for the patients, the authorizing daily, every step of the way, getting authorizations for this or that or the other thing to get my patient's care accomplished.
Right.
And every day that the insurance company stonewalls and inhibits the care, and doesn't have to pay for something, they make more profit.
Yes.
And it's just very frustrating.
Right. Well, as you know, as I have various little sayings about this, but the insurance companies are not in business for your health.
Yeah.
They're in business for profit.
Correct.
And you know, it's like, that's what they're for. They are profit-making companies.
Exactly.
That's what they're for. In a way, you kind of can't blame them for wanting to maximize profit. It's kind of like, it's one of my little things, you can't blame a lion for killing to eat.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't you wouldn't make a lion the playground monitor at your kid's school. And so putting a profit-making company in charge of financing your health care is kind of like doing that.
If your goal is health care accomplishing health care, you wouldn't have a for-profit health insurance industry in the middle of it. It just doesn't make sense.
Okay, here we go. Grab the door.
Oh, wow. If people listening to this wanted more information about a single-payer system to stabilize our health care, tell them how they could...
You know, if people really want to dig into the technicalities of it, I think the very best place would be looking at the website of Physicians for a National Health Program, PNHP, and I don't know exactly what that website's called, but these days online
Google. It
would be pretty easy to find that on Google. Mm-hmm. So just PNHP or Physicians for a National Health Plan would really be... They have endless, very wonky technical discussions of it for people who want to dig into it on that kind of a level.
And these are physicians. This is a national organization, 20 to 30,000 in number across this country, who've been working on single-payer healthcare for everyone appropriately.
Right.
For many, many years.
And then, of course, politically speaking, I mean, I guess I could simply say I've just got back 2 hours ago to home after 5 days in Nevada campaigning for Senator Sanders in the Nevada caucuses. So our nurses union was the first national union to endorse him. And this is one of the main reasons why, is all the things that we've been talking about. And it's not just that single-payer system that we've talked about, but other things like reducing the cost, which helps to deal with problems.
Thought out approach
to realize, though, is that sitting back and letting them do it.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get to take a lot of people working together in a sustained movement over a period of years to fix it.
Good point.
I would say, best case scenario, 4 to 6 years to really get where we need to get. And so that's not something that anybody's expecting to happen overnight, and Senator Sanders is very clear about that, too, that it's not just about electing somebody. It's about a movement of people to understand these issues, to educate themselves about these issues, and to continue to put pressure on politicians at all levels to take the kind of action that they need to take.
And I know physician organizations like Physicians for National Health Program, PNHP, have many learned minds who would love to be part of that implementation over years.
Right. And our national union, National Nurses United, there's also lots of information on our website about it, though the PNHP website, like I say, is the one that really gets into the wonky details for those who want to understand all the details of how such a thing would work.
Sure. And there is a local organization, Butte County Healthcare Coalition, for people in the Chico area who want to be involved in this type of issue, single-payer healthcare, and supporting that. Butte County Healthcare Coalition. You could Google that as well.
And I think that has a Facebook page, too, if I remember correctly. I'm not sure.
Very good. Well, David Welsh, registered nurse, Inloe Hospital, Board of Directors, California Nurse Association, thank you very much for your information. And I've known you for several years, and your dedication and your gusto to this subject and healthcare, equal and appropriate healthcare for all citizens in this country. I just, you're one of my heroes. Thanks. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Ken. Bye.
Bye. Now, let's say Dr. Lundberg, Butte County Public Health Medical Director. Are you on the line, Dr. Lundberg?
Dr. Logan, this is Dr. Lundberg. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Am I coming through okay?
I hear you loud and clear. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
Well,
what's up?
I appreciate being on the show, and I sure appreciate what you do for Butte County and this show that you have here. We can discuss important health issues, and honored that you include Butte County Public Health Department in that show.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to have you on the show. What's out there? What are we looking at these days, Dr. Logan?
No, Dr. Logan, one of the things that the health department is prepared to do, and that is to handle concerns from the public and from medical providers of new new challenges in healthcare or new infectious diseases, particularly. And we don't get a lot of calls after hours on call, but we get some. Like I received this past weekend, I received a call from one of our local hospitals, and they were asking about how to test for someone with a virus that you probably have heard, so you and your listeners have heard about, and that's Zika virus. I would say that Zika has gotten quite a bit of attention. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interest in the virus. There's some fascination with it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think that there is also some fear. There's mm-hmm. some dread. There's some panic. There's some anxiety. And those emotions, I think, are misplaced. But it is very interesting. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Zika virus for you and your listeners, if that's okay.
You bet.
You know, Zika virus is a virus. It's transmitted by mosquitoes, someone like we're familiar with locally here, West Nile virus. It has it's different than West Nile in that it's here in Butte County, even though we have lots of mosquitoes in Butte County, we do not have currently a mosquito that will transmit Zika. So in Butte County right now, mm-hmm. Zika cannot be transmitted from person to person through these mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good distinction from West Nile virus.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a new virus. We've known about Zika for a long time. It's particularly been in the African area, African countries. What's brought a lot of attention is that it just last year it went to the Americas, South America, Caribbean, Central America, Mexico, and there's been quite a few outbreaks there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the big media attention has been to a condition called microcephaly, which is a small brain that develops inside the mom if they have some suspicion that it might be small heads in these newborns.
Mm-hmm.
That's still to be determined. But it's interesting. We haven't had too many cases in California. We've only had three so far this year in 2016. And all of previous 84 in Butte County or California have a call from travelers.
Mm-hmm.
Zika are actually quite mild compared to things like dengue or West Nile virus. About 80% have no symptoms. And generally, if you do get symptoms, they're mild. It'd be fever, rash, joint pain. And sometimes you get a sort of a swelling of your eye, lining of your eye, called conjunctivitis.
Mm-hmm.
There are no treatments except just supportive care. There's no vaccine, but there has been some work to try to develop a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
The transmission is mainly through mosquitoes, but there has been some suspicion or some suggestion that some people have gotten the infection from infected blood in some of the South American countries. And then there's also some concern that transmission sexually might occur, but these would both be very unusual. The real main thing is through mosquitoes. I think, like I said before, we need to be reasonable about infections like this. I think the public could be very fascinated with them. But if you're not traveling right now, there is really no reason to be concerned in Butte County if you're not traveling to a country as Zika. You know, particularly we do not have the mosquito here, and then there is a travel risk. So people have travel concerns. They can go to places like the CDC website and get some really good advice about preventing Zika. They can also we have a travel clinic at our department, and we see a lot of people that travel. That advice that we give, besides vaccine and malaria prevention, we'd give them advice about preventing Zika if they're going to a country that might have that. And
So people could, if people are planning to travel different areas of the world, they have, is
they
that
do.
What you're
we
telling me?
We have a really nice, I think, a travel clinic that provides a really nice advice for people. There's a lot of shots that are vaccinations mm-hmm. that are recommended for mm-hmm. travel, and also malaria prevention is a big part of that.
Now, how could, if somebody is planning to travel elsewhere in the world, how do they get in contact with the travel clinic?
Our travel clinic is in Chico. It's across from the Chico Junior 2731-891-2731. It's the Butte County Public Health Department. I think we take appointments 5 days a week there, and they see a nurse and review the travel itinerary, look at all the risk of certain diseases, see if we can give people vaccinations if they like them, and also give them malaria prevention if they need it.
And so I'm gonna repeat that. Anybody who is traveling around the world, regardless of concerns about or questions about Zika virus, but other issues of vaccinations and how to prevent, say, mosquito-borne illnesses in other parts of the world, the Butte County Health Department Travel Clinic can be contacted, and you can get an appointment for that travel clinic at the phone number 891-2731. Again, for if you want an appointment at the travel clinic, Butte County Health Department, 891-2731. And I just want to reiterate one more thing said. Have the mosquito that can transmit from one person to another that particular virus.
That's right. We do not have the mosquito. So if someone came as a traveler, had Zika in Butte County, the mosquitoes we have that may bite them could not transmit it to someone else. So we do not have a mosquito. I will warn you, though, in the public, that there are some of these type of mosquitoes that have recently entered California, some southern counties. Mm-hmm. And there does need to be an effort on public health department and vector control organizations across the state to try, if we can, to prevent this mosquito from becoming a endemic mosquito or a mosquito we have part of our group of mosquitoes. This mosquito, besides transmitting Zika, would transmit dengue, yellow fever, and these are some infections we do not really want to have transmitted within Butte County.
Just off the top of my head, is there an information person at Butte County Health Department to if somebody wanted to have more information about how to de-mosquito their place or information about help with mosquitoes? Is there an office at Butte County Health Department relative to that information?
We would help people with some advice, but we have a really good, excellent vector control organizations in Butte County. There are three different districts or organizations who have the public health function of controlling mosquitoes. The one that's the most has covers Chico is the Butte County Mosquito and Vector Control Organization, and they would get you mosquito fish. They would help you. They would help go out to your home and try to find sources of mosquitoes. They are incredibly useful. I do not have their phone number, but it's the Butte County Mosquito and Vector Control District, and they are very active in our county. There's also an organizations in Durham, districts in Durham and also in Oroville that are separate from that, but the
Butte County Mosquito and Vector Control. Someone could Google that. Butte County Mosquito and Vector Control wanted help and information about.
Excellent information and provides help for anybody that needs to want us to control mosquitoes on their property.
Very good. Dr. Lundberg, always a pleasure to have you on this show. Thank you very much. Anything else before we close with you?
Well, thank you so much for your work, and we really want to get better coverage for people. I'm glad this program you had with Mr. Wells, David Wells, is these are important topics.
Very good. Thank you very much. We'll see you in a month.
Yes.
We'll hear from you
nice
in a month.
Talking with you.
Thank you. And thanks to David Welsh, the registered nurse information guy on Single Payer Health Association, a registered nurse at Inlow Hospital. Thank you, David. And thanks to Ray Lager, the engineer for this show. And listen in again the third Thursday of each month, 6 to 7 in the evening, third Thursday of each month for the Doctor's Inn. And the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you people listening, the KZFR members, and by Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. Certified arborist John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring about Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached by calling 518-0924. And by Bruce Jenkins Insurance and Financial Services. Bruce specializes in life and health insurance, long-term care, and annuities. For answers to your questions about Medicare, covered California, and state mandated required health insurance, you can call Bruce Jenkins at 530-781-3592 or visit brucejenkinsinsurance.com. The opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Stay tuned now for Beatle Nation.
To be filled.
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor, Lord, or prescription to be filled.
I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor. Only my baby's arms could take away these chills.
Bye-bye.